Hi there. Welcome to day four of the Kelly Nash podcast. And thank you for listening. If this is your first time, I'm really happy you found it. As I said on the very first podcast, I believe that it's an act of God for you to find this because I'm really not doing very much to promote this. And I want to say, so far we've had, now this may not sound like much, but again, I am not really doing anything to promote this. And we've had 16 different people who are now participating with this podcast, listening to it, interacting with it in some way or another. So I'm excited about that. That's, I felt like God was telling me to do a podcast, and I begrudgingly followed orders. And so with that in mind, we try to keep it to under 15 minutes every day, just little brief blurbs in the news, things where we can find where God is working, or maybe things we need to bring our attention to. A couple of stories today that caught my attention. Here we go. This is the first story that caught my attention today is out of Rhode Island, where a 53-year-old man by the name of Daniel Lafayette tells police that he was at Chuck E. Cheese in Attleboro. It says Massachusetts, but I thought I remember. Okay, so it's a Rhode Island man who's in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Okay, Daniel Lafayette, 53. He's at a Chuck E. Cheese. I'm assuming he's there with other people. It doesn't say if he is or he isn't, but a 53-year-old guy, it'd be a little awkward for him to be there all by himself. However, whether he was there or not with somebody else, this is where it gets really awkward. He dropped the tokens that he had, and I guess he had probably a big handful of tokens from Chuck E. Cheese. He dropped them on the ground. At that point, a 6-year-old girl attempted to pick them up. He kicked her in the stomach and sent her flying. As she's crying, she's yelling, "Why would you do that? I was trying to help you pick them up." Her mother comes running over and says, "What in the world are you doing? She was trying to help you." He says, "No, she wasn't. She was trying to steal from me." We have nothing written here to indicate that this man has some sort of mental illness, that he has all his faculties. So I'm just going to go under the assumption that he does have all his faculties and that he really, truly valued those Chuck E. Cheese tokens. Maybe it's a little too flippant for me to pass judgment on this story, but I try to put myself in his shoes and say, what if I had dropped something really valuable, like real cash? Like, let's say I dropped $100 on the ground or $1,000, some exorbitant sum of cash that you probably wouldn't expect to find in a Chuck E. Cheese. $1,000 for some reason, you were going to pay off a car or something. You had all that cash and it dropped out of your pocket and you saw a 6-year-old starting to pick it up, or a 10-year-old. Let's even go with like a teenager. Let's make it somebody who you would think is going to steal from you, like a 16-year-old is picking up your $1,000. So now at least at this point, you have yourself in a position of, okay, I have something of real value, which is $1,000, and I have somebody who I could honestly believe has the intention of stealing from me right in front of me. How do you handle that situation? I think all of us recognize that kicking a 6-year-old over Chuck E. Cheese tokens is beyond ridiculous. By the way, he's been arrested. He's posted his $500 bail. So it wasn't like he was in dire straits. He had the $500 to get out of jail. He just really wanted those Chuck E. Cheese tokens. But it shows you where not only his heart is, but where a lot of people's hearts are, in the sense that, like I said, if you had $1,000 that you were, and you needed that $1,000. I'm not saying this is like, you're somebody who's making $1 million a year. You needed that $1,000 for your family's groceries or make car payments, make a mortgage payment, rent payment, whatever it is. And you drop it, and a 16-year-old, and we'll, instead of making it a girl, we'll make it a boy. He's an aggressive 16-year-old who looks like a hoodlum, has picked up your $1,000 or is attempting to pick it up. What does your heart tell you at that moment to do? If it is to hit the person, then you have a heart issue. And I don't say that in a way where I'm condemning you, because you just condemned yourself. I say that in a loving way, recognizing the fact that we all have heart issues. God wouldn't want you to kick a thief. He also doesn't want you to get rolled like a, you know, some pansy either. There is a line. I hate it when people give you ultimatums. Oh, so you're just supposed to let the people come and rob you blind? Is that what you're supposed to do? Obviously not. You're supposed to try to protect your family as best you can. But if somebody is, you've dropped something and somebody is picking it up right in front of you, they would be very brazen to attempt to steal that from you. That would be a brazen, and I'm not saying that there aren't a lot of people who would do that. There are a bunch of brazen thieves out there. We see them on the news all the time. But the vast majority of human beings, as evil as we are as a human race, the vast majority that are bending over to pick it up are going to return it to you. Will they skim a little off the top? Maybe a few of them would. But if your heart is to kick this person to create, before they've even attempted the actual act of stealing from you, you have a serious heart issue, and you should pray for that. Now, the other story, let me see if I can, and this is something I was trying to do yesterday. I want to see if I can look at something on my computer while it's recording, because I had this story up. Yes, here it is. Okay. This just came out in USA Today. And it says, it's an interview. The headline says, you will be microchipped eventually. And then it talks to a bunch of people. There's a company in Wisconsin that's, if you work with that company, you have to get embedded with a microchip. And it talks about the debate that's going on. And then somewhere in here, there's an interview with a professor of sociology who says, it may not happen in my lifetime, but it will certainly happen in my kids' lifetime. 50 years from now, there will not be any negative connotation about it. We will all have been desensitized by the social stigma by then. And, you know, that makes you wonder, okay, I'm not saying that that's not true. You know, this guy's a professor of sociology. He probably knows how the human mind works and watches how groups of people move over periods of time. So I'm going to take that statement as a fact, or at least a very more educated than I would be on knowing what human beings will be like in 50 years from now. But I started wondering, do we have good reasons currently to not want to be microchipped? It's kind of like, you know, 50 years ago, you know, I'm in an interracial marriage, right? So 50 years ago, it would have been in this state and a lot of other states, it would have been illegal for me to marry my wife. Did they have good reasons at that time to prohibit that? I think that we have shown through the Bible that they did not. But then there's other things that we were illegal 50 years ago that are legal today that maybe we shouldn't have. And, you know, obviously the one I'm thinking of right off the top of my head is gay marriage. Is gay marriage something that people had good reason to prohibit at the time? Well, it depends on your worldview, right? If your worldview is one of, I'm a human being, this is my life, I can do what I want, as long as I'm not hurting other people. I'm not injuring anybody else. I'm just, you know, I live in America, the land of the free, the home of the brave. I have the right to pursuit of happiness. Well, if two consenting adults want to do something with one another, who are we as a society to say no? I was making the argument years ago when this whole gay marriage debate came up that Christians had lost the gay marriage debate a long time ago. And when I say a long time ago, I mean like before World War II ago. There were several Christian authors at that time in the 1930s and 40s, C.S. Lewis being the most famous, who said that the word marriage had already been hijacked by society. And what had happened with that was that, it had become a government institution. It was no longer a religious ceremony. It was a religious ceremony for a lot of people, but you could go to a justice of the peace. The idea of getting married was something that basically it was like a merger. That's what that was. It was a business transaction. And you have combined two forces, which now are eligible for tax breaks in most of the modern world. And so obviously governments wanted families. They wanted moms and dads. So they encouraged marriage and they tried to encourage you to stay together financially. And so people who might not have ever considered marriage suddenly got married. And then there was also the religious kind of, the religious groups who were saying it's bad if you're not married, you're living in sin, all that sort of stuff. But, by the 1930s and 40s, that had already been hijacked. The Christian standard for marriage is so much higher than what the world's standard for marriage is, or America's standard. I'll just say for America, I don't live in Europe, so I'll just say America's legal definition of marriage is so far below what a Christian marriage is called to be that at that time, these authors, again, World War II and even previous, were saying, you should come up with another word. And maybe not wear your ring on your left finger there, on your left hand on the third finger there, whatever. You should come up with something, some other symbol to show that you're in a Christian marriage as opposed to just a regular, government marriage. But, so by those standards, I agreed that homosexuals should have the right to marry, because if it's not a religious thing, and we had already proven that it wasn't a religious thing just by what the standard was that had to be met in order for you to be in a marriage in a government, then who are we to say no? And I felt bad for all the Christians who were yelling that this is defacing God's word or whatever they were saying, because that battle had been lost a long time ago. So getting back to the microchipping now, well, that's a lot of religious people are very worried about microchipping. Obviously, those of you who study the Bible understand that in Revelation, they talk about taking the number of the beast, and a lot of people are afraid of the number 666 because that's the way it's translated in our Bibles. And what does it mean? Well, the definition of the number of the beast is not necessarily the number 666. What it does, the number of the beast, according to the definition, says you will not, without taking the number of the beast, you will not be able to participate in commerce. That's a very fearful idea. If you think about it, you are not capable of buying or selling goods without taking the number of the beast in the future. And so ever since the last 10 or 15 years, when this whole idea of microchipping human beings has come along, a lot of Christians have resisted that and shot a lot of shade at it, so to speak, because that to them is taking the number of the beast. Suddenly, if I don't do it, you're telling me I won't be able to participate in commerce. So that has to be the number of the beast. But I would also just give you a libertarian reason for not doing it, just a good old common sense reason, which I know will be poo-pooed by many. But the idea that you are now trackable at all times by the government or by third parties, that should frighten you. And people who say, well, I have nothing to fear, or don't be naive, they're already tracking you with your phones. Hey, if you believe that, then you should be doing what I do, which is I shut off my phone a lot of the time. Yeah, I just shut it off so the GPS is not on, or I just deactivate the GPS. There are ways for you to not be tracked at all times if you believe that people are tracking you. And I'm not doing anything illegal, but the idea that a third party is tracking you, the reason that the Patriots who moved to America were resistant to the British was not because they were doing illegal activities. Why they didn't want these sudden seizures and searches of their homes was not because they were doing illegal activities. It was because at that point, if the government is that powerful, they can then plant evidence on you. They can make things up about you. And if you're just going to allow them to track you 24/7, they can put you in all kinds of scenarios. Yeah, you were at the corner of so-and-so. You must have seen this. And because you saw this, we know you participated in that. So that's just on a libertarian thing. I'm never getting microchipped. Not going to happen in my lifetime. But like I said, I'm probably not going to be here in 50 years. If I am, and I'm 100 years old, I'd still be saying, don't do it. Don't let them microchip you. But the desensitization that they're talking about, I believe that is real. And it's the exact same thing that's happened with a lot of drugs. It's happened with the sexual activities. And there's always going to be a group of people that are saying that it's better to go in this direction. I am of the firm thought pattern that when I see what they say is an improvement, 90 to 99% of the time, it is not an improvement. Most of these movements to make my life better or make society better usually backfire. Whether it's abortion, that was supposed to make life better for so many people, and I've met so many women whose lives have not been ruined per se, although some people would say that their lives have been ruined. That's their words, not mine. But the guilt and the shame and the whatever, and then, of course, the legalization of drugs, whatever the case may be. It doesn't really matter. Whatever I see them saying is going to make things better for people usually makes them worse. I'm just noticing my clock here, and it seems like I am running out of time for today. Again, I try to keep them quick. If you want to reach out to me, do so on Twitter, at Kelly Nash Radio, or you can just hit me on the email, kellynash_99@yahoo.com. I'll be a little more uplifting tomorrow, I promise. Have a great day.